Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to A Time for Justice. This show discusses legal and current events in a roundtable discussion of legal minds. We discuss this country's centuries-long failure to apply, uphold, and enforce the laws, and the overall failure of the legal system to give justice and the negative impacts these failures have had on Black people and their Black families. Ultimately, we want fair dealing. We want justice under the law. But all too often, this is not the actions that we see. My name is Sister Pamela Muhammad, and I am an attorney. Our guest tonight will not make those excuses for racist conduct, which are really just distractions from the truth, which is the path to justice and equal protection. Let's talk about just, fair, and equal solutions, which are in the best interest of the people. Let's remove the distractions. Tonight's topic is municipal courts and the poor, gateway to the criminal justice system. As I mentioned earlier, my name is Pamela Muhammad, and I am the host of A Time for Justice. I'm very excited about tonight's show because as we talk about municipal court systems, we know these are systems where low-level crimes are often alleged, such as traffic tickets, such as broken tail lights and stop signs and failure to cut your grass, and things like this. And oftentimes our people are brought into this system of oppression. And we're talking about how this system, municipal courts, often be a gateway to the criminal justice system. So at the heart of our study tonight, we're going to talk about Ferguson, Missouri. And we're going to use Ferguson as a municipal court system that is now being looked upon as a model for other systems of oppression. Because as we all know, our minister, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, talked to us back when Ferguson happened, when the murder of our young brother Michael Brown, who was in Ferguson, Missouri. And he talked to us about how it was a sign. Ferguson, Missouri was a sign, and that it was actually the microcosm of the macrocosm. So it's interesting to me because when I look up the word microcosm, we look at that as being a community or place or a situation. It's a miniature. It's a miniature situation. It has characteristics and qualities that are similar to the macrocosm. And the macrocosm is the whole. So what we know is that what happened in Ferguson is happening all over this country when it comes to municipal court systems. So real fast, we can talk about municipal court systems where warrants and people are arrested and harm and revenue is generated and Blacks are stopped disproportionately. And we know those harms that can occur as a result of these systems, again, can be a gateway to criminal justice system. So I've got some excellent, excellent panelists this evening. They've been so kind to come out of their schedules to join us. First of all, I'd like to introduce an attorney by the name of Gerald Christmas, who is no stranger to A Time for Justice. Mr. Christmas is a community activist, and he's been a litigator for over 20 years, and he works in the area of criminal defense, personal injury, civil rights litigation. To go on, Mr. Christmas is from what we know as St. Louis, which is right in that Ferguson, Missouri cluster. So he'll be able to give us some great information on that. Mr. Christmas is a graduate of Texas Southern University, Thurgood Marshall School of Law, and he is active as in the organization such as Phi Beta Sigma, National Bar Association. He's been the past president of bar associations and 100 black men. And one thing I want to note about Mr. Christmas as well is that he was a public servant at one time as a prosecutor. So I'm going to open up his mic and welcome him into our show.
Thank you.
Let's see, Attorney Christmas. How are you, sir?
Sister Muhammad? I'm fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you so much. Next, I would like to open up the mic of our brother, and we are so honored to have our brother Maurice Muhammad, who is actually a magistrate. He's born in the August 69, and I'm looking at his resume, but he's born in Birmingham, Alabama. He actually works now in the municipal court. He's a magistrate in the city. He started out in Birmingham, where he served until 2012. He actually has been very active in the community. He served in several programs regarding community law and domestic violence. And in 2000, he was named as the domestic violence liaison to the Birmingham Police Department. In 2012, Mr. Muhammad was appointed as the chief magistrate for the city of Bessemer. So I want to talk also about Mr. Muhammad's education, where he was educated at Fisk University. That's where he did his undergraduate, and he also completed Miles Law School. Mr. Muhammad, as I said, is a chief magistrate for the city of Bessemer. He's a contributing writer on Alabama expungement laws. He actually lectures on college campuses. And again, as a senior at Fisk, he became a member of the Nation of Islam, and he was introduced to the teachings at that time. And so it's very, very my honor and privilege to have Mr. Muhammad on, because he's actually served several positions in the mosque, and he was the student minister in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, from 2005 to 2010. Mr. Muhammad is married, and he also is the father of three children. Let me go ahead and open up Mr. Muhammad. Brother Maurice, your mic is open. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. How are you?
Oh, I am well by God's grace, dear sister. Thank you so much for the opportunity to share with our brothers and sisters.
Yes, sir. Thank you for coming on our show. And I want to introduce our last panelist. Our last panelist for tonight, last but certainly not least, is Attorney Asil Muhammad. And Mr. Muhammad is hailing to us, born and raised in the city of Brooklyn, New York, where he earned a bachelor's from Lincoln University, in which is the premier historically black college, he'd like to say, in Pennsylvania. He actually studied also at the District of Columbia. He has the discipline of urban policy. Mr. Muhammad is a licensed attorney. in Houston, Texas. He worked in the fields of federal employment discrimination, civil rights matters, representing persons accused of crimes in both federal and state courts. Mr. Muhammad actually has been a speaker, serving as judges, mock competitions. He is a staff assistant to the General Council of the Nation of Islam. He's a member of the NAACP, and he is also a member of Omega Psi Phi fraternity, as well as being a brother in the nation. And I have to say also, before I bring him on, Mr. Christmas is also a member of Phi Beta Sigma fraternity. Brother Theo, As-salamu alaykum.
Can you hear me?
The mic is open. Yes.
Wa alaykum salam to Pamela, and thank you so very much for having me and in that wonderful introduction. And Brother Maurice and Brother Gerald, it's a pleasure and an honor to be on this panel with both of you as well.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Thank you. And before I want to make sure I'm complete with this. If I bring up fraternities and sororities, I have to be complete. Our brother Maurice Muhammad is also a member of Omega Psi Phi fraternity, and wanted to make that complete, as well as just raise for the audience that Mr. Christmas is also married and the father of, I believe, four beautiful daughters, lovely wife. And so we just want to always make sure we're complete, because these things are important. We're talking about family men. We're talking about professional men. We're talking about dedicated servants. And as we talk tonight about our subject, about municipal courts and about some of the bad things that they do, I also want to make sure that we have a diverse group today, because we do have a chief magistrate, and we know that our brother Maurice Muhammad, he'll be representing to talk to us not only about some of the problems that he sees, but some of the good things that are being done. See, black men are diversified as professionals in this country, and we want to represent all sides. You know, when we talk to Brother Gerald, we're talking to someone who is able to go into some of the meetings and some of the actual talking to mayors. And once upon a time, he ran for the district attorney's office himself after being a district attorney, and I think it's called circuit attorney in St. Louis. And, of course, Brother Athiel Muhammad, who has always been a defense attorney, right? He's that's what he does. But, you know, before he did that, he also worked for free. He was fearless as a soldier, working for the cause and supporting the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, you know, and working in these communities with our people. And so all of these brothers, this is what they do. And I really wanted to give that thank you and shout out for this diverse perspective we're bringing tonight, but also, letting the audience know that we do appreciate these black men. So, like I said, we're going to talk about municipalities tonight, and we're using Ferguson as a backdrop. And one of the things I wanted to bring out about Ferguson before, you know, we just start our conversation. So municipal courts are small courts with small jurisdictions, and they deal with the things we deal with every day, like minor violations like parking, traffic, housing code violations. So in St. Louis, where Ferguson was, there were over 90 municipalities. And I think Brother Maurice is going to tell us about Alabama maybe having several municipalities as well. And the importance of that is that people were getting ticketed and stopped, and these municipalities, they collect revenue, and they can really cause some financial harm. You know, you can get license suspensions, you can get locked up even for crimes such as, you know, your tail light was out, and somehow that turns into a warrant being for your arrest. And when we talk about the poor, something that we saw in Ferguson is that there's several municipalities. Of course, you got them in the black neighborhoods, you got them in the white neighborhoods. So two of the Ferguson and Florissant, which were two of the municipalities in predominantly black neighborhoods, they actually profited like $3.5 million from their courts. in 2000, I think it was 13. So that's a lot of money for traffic tickets and targeting and stopping and harassing our people. And one of the studies also showed that in another jurisdiction, which is 96% black, and the salary was $13,000, right? So, you know, this is very poor. Well, they collected in 2013 $1.7 million. Now, this is another municipality by the name of Pine Lawn. But when you compare that to the wealthy suburb, which was 15 times bigger than this, you hear me? It was 15 times bigger. The average salary was $47,000. And they only collected $1.2 million. So see, when we say that this is a tax on the poor, or are the poor the target and maybe the gateway to the criminal justice system, this is what we're talking about. And then finally, I just want to bring out the part about the harm, because we're always looking at how now black, you know, people are in these communities. We talked about it last week. There's a lot of violence allegedly going on, or there's a lot of self-destructive behavior. But we want to look at where some of this comes from, because most of the time in municipal court, these are hardworking people, everyday people trying to make a living, maybe some troubled youth. But the study showed that as a result of this ticketing and this oppression that occurred in this Ferguson situation, harassment, that's what they call it, that the University of New York found that harassment can lead to lack of confidence, fatigue, depression, isolation, frustration, stress, trauma, and a loss of motivation. These ramifications can lead to a direct decrease in productivity, making it difficult for the individual to succeed at work or to engage in their communities. So, again, my premise is this. Where we're looking at a state of Missouri, which is where Ferguson was, where blacks were 63% of the people who were pulled over, and that's a real disproportionate amount of our population there, we're seeing why some of our people are struggling, why this is the gateway to the criminal justice system. So I want to open it up, and I want to open up this conversation by I want to turn to Brother Gerald, because I think you can give us anything that you'd like to fill in regarding municipal courts and how it related in Ferguson, Missouri, if I've missed anything.
I think you did a good job, Sister Pam, of covering all of that. It is a tax on the poor, and we have a real unique situation in St. Louis metropolitan area, because we have 88 municipalities. So we have 88 Fergusons. You know about Ferguson because of the unfortunate death of Michael Brown, but there are 87 other Fergusons in this area, and it's a real problem.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you for that. So, again, Brother Magistrate, Brother Maurice, can you talk to us about what you're seeing in Bessemer, Alabama, and what do you think our people need to know about your system?
Well, just with that, I think as you were speaking of Ferguson and Bessemer, Alabama, and Birmingham, Alabama, and Mobile, Alabama, Montgomery, Alabama, I think we've all been bitten by the same dog. Mm. But at the same point, I think inside of that, there is a pathology to the madness. Because just like any other city or any other municipality, most people can't go to jail for a traffic ticket. That's not what puts you in the harm's way. The harm's way is the failure to appear. The harm's way is the failure to address it. Because a lot of times those situations, and like with our municipality, we offer we offer community service. And what we did, I was actually in a meeting with some of our city officials, and they looked in the meeting and they said, someone in this room is going to put together our community service project. And it won't be me, it won't be me, it won't be me, it won't be me. And I was the only one left. So what I did, I went to our churches, I went to all of our nonprofit organizations and say, hey, how can we begin to partner as a community partner to bring citizens to pay off or to work off their fines or work off if you're not working or if you have some type of economic disparity and you need some help? And so we began to work on those plans, but out of that came a deeper plan, because from that we began to look at the plan that we had and say, hey, these young people, these people here can also be certified in learning how to do what they're doing. So we wanted to address it from the standpoint of how do you become proactive in dealing with this issue. Yes, you ran the red light. Yes, you didn't have on your seatbelt. And we know, quote unquote, that all of these violations are based on insurance issues and economic issues that would say, hey, if you have suspended license and this many suspended license in your area, it's going to be a high-risk area, so your insurance goes up. So your insurance is already up in a economically deprived area. So now you have more people driving around without insurance. And then when they hit you, now we got a problem. So what we were trying to do and what we wanted to do in that is we wanted to condense the problem. We wanted to work at the problem at its root and say, how do we solve the issue of the not having? And that's one of the things that we began to work toward and were somewhat successful in. But in all of that, you have to be responsible. And one of the things that we did, we wanted to bring the knowledge of the court system to the people, because oftentimes when people, black folk people go to court, they don't see black people in court on the other side of the table. And they don't see a people that have their best interests in mind or their best interests in the community's interests in mind. So when they come to court, it's like, we're going to throw the book at you. And when we throw the book at you, we hit you with the highest fines. We're going to hit you with the highest punishment possible. But what about if we can work out not a punitive situation, but a corrective situation?
Yes, sir. Great. Thank you so much for that. Because, you know, I think your place at this table is important, because ultimately, we want to be able to make our own communities decent and safe places to live. And so when we look at these problems in our community using a model such as yours, where you have more black faces perhaps than some of these big municipalities, I think it's so important because we want to tell our people this is how the system works and this is what's going on and how does it impact black people. And what you've described is what we call judicial discretion. Let me ask someone else who may not have some of the genius or the judicial discretion to help black people. How are these systems creating gateways to the criminal justice system that is not helping our people at all? I mean, Brother Theo, let me ask you. I know that since you're in perhaps Houston's municipality system doesn't work like this, but we see it in the low-level misdemeanor courts where probations or, failure to actually have good representation can really glean the same type of cyclical effect into the gateway to the criminal justice system. So what do you see?
Well, actually, you know, what Brother Maurice said is spot on, that when that if you get pulled over for a ticket, you know, ran the red light or failed to put on a turn signal, those are all moving violations that, you know, are ticketable offenses. But the problem is, though, that seats. When you get the ticket, you know, you get, you see on there that, and oftentimes they're, you know, municipal court, city of Houston or whatever, you know, whatever jurisdiction you're in, and you either pay the fine or you have a court date. Now, what happens is, though, because as Brother Maurice was saying, it's not necessarily that you are in jail, you know, if you are arrested, not necessarily for failing to pay the fine, but for failing to appear in court, then it becomes a contempt of court issue. And so when we talk about the gateway to the criminal justice system, you know, for the most part, most people are not charged with felonies. And most people probably are not charged with, you know, serious misdemeanors that would call for any sort of jail time. So most people's foray into the court system is the municipal courts, you know, the lower level courts, if you will. And we see how, you know, crowded they are and, you know, how everything happens. As Brother Maurice said, you know, we don't see, a lot of times we don't see, you know, or particularly black people, we don't see, you know, ourselves on the other side of the table, so to say. So that brings me to the book title by Justice Bruce Wright, entitled Black Robes, White Justice. You know, we don't see ourselves on the other side. So when we see His Honor Maurice Muhammad on the bench or other, you know, black persons on the bench, we are hoping for some sort of justice, leniency, some sort of mercy as he, you know, is putting together this program in his city and other cities. But the problem is, part of the problem is, of course, that our failure sometimes to address some of the issues. So, for instance, you know, as you were saying, Sister Pamela, leading into it, you know, when a person, let's say, is charged with a felony or charged with a misdemeanor that is punishable, you know, by incarceration or imprisonment, well, they might, you know, a person may get, you know, probated sentence or something like that. But then, of course, with those probated sentences become fines and fees to be paid. Now, what winds up happening now is, if now I'm on, let's say, probation for a crime, whether it be a felony or misdemeanor, but now I'm behind on my fees. Now I'd be, you know, I'm now similar to, as Brother Maurice was saying, and as we were saying a few moments ago, it now becomes a contempt issue. So now I'm pulled back into court to be admonished by the judge that I have to pay these fees or those fees. But sometimes we don't get ahead of the game. And so our fees begin to rise. And now we, you know, miss 1 month, 2 months. Now we're in the arrears in, let's say, 3, 4, 5 months, and we cannot catch up. And so now there might be a warrant out for us because the district attorney or prosecuting attorney, depending upon which jurisdiction, they want now to file a motion to revoke our probation. But it's based on us failing to pay fees, and now if we don't come to court for to address the motion to revoke probation, now we're held in contempt, and the contempt order is oftentimes or sometimes what then can land us in jail.
That's so true.
Yeah, and you're in Texas, so again, you're Texas specific. Was someone else going to jump in? Because I had something to say.
Just wanted to jump in about Missouri, because it's a little different in Missouri, and especially in the St. Louis metropolitan area where we have the 88 municipalities. Often, you're correct, the initial charge will not land you in jail. This initial speeding ticket will not. But in the St. Louis metropolitan area, if you miss that court date, then they will issue a warrant for you.
Yes.
If you miss that court date. And so oftentimes, because we have so many municipalities, for an example, I can leave my office and go home and drive through four different municipalities because we have a lot of small municipalities. Mm-hmm. So I could drive through four different municipalities just driving 8 miles to go home.
Yeah.
And each one of those municipalities has the ability to ticket you.
Sure.
And you can miss a court date in each one of them because they have evening courts on different dates. And so it's common for people to unintentionally miss a court date and go warn and not know. So, for example, you could have missed a court date in Ferguson and be warned and not know that and get pulled over in Jennings for a routine stop sign ticket, but they'll say you have a warrant from Ferguson now and we need to take you in custody,
mm-hmm.
which means that your car is going to be towed.
Mm-hmm.
You may not make it to work. You may lose your job. And you will have to come up with revenue to bond out on this ticket. And Jennings will hold you for Ferguson to come and pick you up. And they may not come get you. They have generally about 24 hours to come and get you. So they may
not
come and get you till the next day. And that's what complicates the situation here. On top of, if you fail to appear in court, they also have the ability to suspend your driver's license. And so you could have that warrant along with your driver's license suspended and not know it. So when you get pulled over for that stop sign violation, they also hit you with another ticket for driving while suspended, which is a higher point violation here. So in hiring an attorney to represent you on that, that's going to cost you more money. And that's how we have people that get caught up in the system here, and that's why they highlighted the situation that was happening in Ferguson and tried to shed light on all these municipalities and how they were profiting off of the municipal courts and how people get caught in this system and they find that they don't have a way out of it because they are poor and they can't afford the representation to get them out of the system. So they just keep driving with these tickets and warrants, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
You know, Sister Pam, if I may add with what Brother Christmas is saying, like in Missouri and Alabama, if I drove 5 miles down the street here in the Birmingham area, I will go through six municipalities. And as he said, in Alabama, it's a little bit different. You have to have a population base of a certain amount of people in order to, entertain a court or create a court and write tickets. So if your city is not large enough, then you won't be able to do that. But at the same time, you have enough cities that are large enough that they can do that. And just for instance, if you are in my municipality, in Bessemer, Alabama, if you're caught driving while suspended or revoked, that's $566. That fine is $566. And so just think about and multiply that by five, just riding through that area. And now you're $2,000, $3,000 in the hole, and now your license are suspended. And in Alabama, most jobs that you receive, one of the main requirements is that you have to have a valid driver's license. And so if your driver's license is suspended and you're applying for a job, they can hold you from the job until you reinstate your driver's license. And so that's some of the reason that, you know, we're looking at it from the perspective of how do we correct this situation. But on the flip side of it, there has to be a greater sense of, a greater sense of accountability and responsibility on the citizen. We can't let them off the hook, but at the same time, you don't push them off the plank either. And
yes,
that's where,
and I agree with that.
Yeah, and that's where I'm coming from. We don't push people off the plank, and you're not going to bully our people. We're not going to just do them any type of way. Brother Athiel was talking about the probation issues, and we had some issues kind of sort of what they were dealing with in Ferguson with these probation services. where you come in and pay probation fees. Just say, for instance, if you're paying $100, then 60 of it goes to the company and 40 goes to your fee. So who's working for who?
Right.
You know, so in Alabama, right. We began to really attack that. You know, we're not going to have these probation services come out here and charge these exorbitant fees for monitoring people and then not pay their municipal, not pay the people are paying them, but they're not paying the municipality, and their fines are growing, but at the same time, their coffers are growing.
That's
so,
right.
You know, so you had ways people are making money off of the chagrin of other people and the degradation of other people, and that's not fair. See, I guess one of the things, being a member of the Nation of Islam, we are taught freedom, justice, and equality.
Mm.
So not only do we want justice, we want an equal justice. If you're going to give little Tad over in the white neighborhood a $300 fine, why are you going to give Tyrone in the black neighborhood a $600 fine for the same offense? See, that's
yes,
where that's what we're pulling at. That's what we're trying to pop against and go against and say, hey, we got to hold this up and show this to you. But at the same time, when you look at your municipality and your municipality is 90% black or 80% black, and you got, when you do the inventory of your warrants and you do an audit on your warrants and you see that 75 to 80% of your warrants are failure to appear, then we have a problem.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's interesting because we're talking about it, too, from the concept of excessive stops of black males. And we've been looking all year about the shootings. You know, we know the police mm-hmm. shootings. But there's another side of this, and a lot of times it is the traffic stops. It is the
mm-hmm.
being stuck in these systems. And we know that black
mm-hmm.
people, you know, we're poor a lot of times. We're 10 times more
mm-hmm.
likely to live in high poverty areas. And these court systems, is very interesting with Ferguson and other municipalities in that area, St. Louis area, there were lines that used to be around these little bitty courthouses, right? And you
mm-hmm.
would see the lines that stretched as far as like a football field, you know, for people who were supposed to be in court at 7. And here it was 7:45, and you still in line. And people are treating you like you are on getting on some kind of slave dungeon ship. And they're really
right.
hoping that you missed court, you know? And so this was a different system because I think we're looking at the massive amount of ticketing that comes from all this intense surveillance that we live under. I can remember one time driving down the street in one of those municipalities, and I saw like a roadblock, and I said, oh, okay, well, let me go the other way, you know, and I just kind of turned to go the other way, and I was pulled over. Immediately they swooped on me like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, this is the type
you gotta
of surveillance.
Go the
and, right, because
yeah.
I didn't know.
I
mean, I grew up in St. Louis. I did an article called Life in the Valley of the Shadow of Death, because
right,
sometimes
right.
for poor people coming across that particular metropolitan area is
sure.
like walking a tightrope. And so, you know, this is another, and let me say this, and it was so interesting because we're talking about the harm and we're talking about the frustration, and I think that's why it's good, Brother Magistrate, Brother Maurice, you all can address things like job creation, because when I got to Ferguson, you know, there are young people in St. Louis that were afraid to leave their houses. Now, yeah, we say you should go to court,
yeah.
but go to court. For what? If you owe them $1,500 and you know you're on a payment plan and you don't even have a job to make that $50 payment,
right.
that's going to be of a concern. And like you say,
right.
versus maybe with the other community, they could get a lawyer that might get them a better payment plan or get them back on a payment plan and others.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking
mm-hmm.
about abusive systems as well as looking at models of better systems. And I think that's so interesting.
And Sister Pam.
So Pamela, see what also happens down here in Houston, as you know, see, when I was talking about, you know, that we, you know, now you get, you know, you have this warrant, let's say, because you failed to appear in you know, for your traffic ticket. Now, what I didn't say, but, you know, as Brother Maurice was talking, it reminded me, you know, and as Brother Gerald was saying, that now I have two charges now.
Right.
I have a failure to appear. And I still have to answer
charge.
To the traffic ticket. Right.
Right.
So now I have, as we said, two charges. Let's say the traffic ticket may have been, you know, what, $100, let's say. But as you know, that as some of us may know who are listening, that once I don't pay that, if, you know, then the ticket, the fee may double or triple, whatever the situation
mm-hmm.
might be. Now I have a failure to appear. So now I do go to court now. You know, let's say now I have two cases. So now the prosecutor may say, well, in order to dismiss one, you know, we'll give you a fine for failure to appear, but you still have track. So now I'm still stuck between a rock and a hard place. Now, what happens if I cannot afford or I don't even know? So now I get arrested because I had a warrant because I did not make the court appearance. Now, in order for me to get out of jail, I have to post the bond, and oftentimes,
mm-hmm.
let's say, if the bond, if it's, let's say, down here in the city of Houston, sometimes the bond amount is the actual amount of the ticket. So now,
mm-hmm.
let's say the ticket ballooned to, let's say, $200. Now my bond amount is $200, so I'm bonded out, but now I still got to come back to court to answer the failure to appear and answer the
mm-hmm.
traffic ticket. And in addition to that, because, again, this is the first foray or the smallest foray into or the lowest court, I don't know the system. So now
mm-hmm.
I hire an attorney who's now more money out of my poor pocket. And so
right.
I know not where to turn. And so oftentimes, sometimes people say, well, heck, I might as well just sit out the ticket. So now sometimes I might be in jail 2, 3, 4 days, whatever the situation is. I'm sitting out the ticket. So
mm-hmm.
I've now converted
mm-hmm.
or what has now been converted into, let's say, me running a stop sign or a traffic, you know, light or something like that. Now it's turned into me, you know, because of a financial consideration, me now saying, okay, I now have to sit out. I might as well sit out that ticket. And as Brother Gerald was saying, now when I make that
mm-hmm.
decision, now did I lose my job? You know,
mm-hmm.
when I sat out and
right.
I got arrested, did I, and my car was impounded, you know, now I have to pay storage fees and all of this stuff. It's a never-ending vicious cycle. And who knows
sure.
whatever else has been there. So it's a difficult situation.
And I do want to give Attorney Christmas a time. I think he was going to be next, and then you, Brother
oh, yes,
Maurice.
Right.
But
yes,
I do want to say, so, of course, we believe don't commit crimes. We are not in any way, shape, or form encouraging people to commit any crimes, but we're lawyers, so we know a lot of times people are stopped for crimes that they did not commit. You know,
sure,
and sometimes
sure.
they're not given warrants for things like your little license plate is expired. And of course, I say don't drive then. Maybe you shouldn't drive if your car is not. But we're still living in a country that disproportionately targets and surveils and stops black people. And I mean, even lawyers and even professionals get stopped and jailed in this Ferguson environment, and sometimes
wow.
these crimes are not, they're not guilty of it, you know, police this discretion. So we kind of want to put it in that context while it's definitely respecting the fact that, Brother Maurice, you're the one who gives us ideas as well on how to make our communities better, how to, you know, you the black face, you give us, and you're the fair black face, as well as being a member of the nation. So I'm enjoying it. Brother Gerald, did you want to add in?
I just want to give you a quick story about how this can become deadly.
Okay.
had a client, DeJuan Bryson, who got picked up for shoplifting in Jennings, which is another municipality like Ferguson. He was trying to take 3 sticks of deodorant, and he was stopped in the store, and they recovered the 3 sticks of deodorant, but he was still taken to the Jennings Municipal Jail, and he was held on a $500 bond that his mother posted. He missed the first court date and went warrant, got picked up again and showed back up for the second court date. When he came to the second court date, the judge said, we want you to go to a school, a class, a theft class. But that theft class costs money also. And he said, you take this theft class and then you come back on the next court date. Well, he didn't sign up for the theft class, and he went warrant again because he missed that next court date. He and his girlfriend got into an argument. She called the police. They came and picked him up. This was in St. Louis City. They picked him up because of that disturbance and saw that he had a warrant in Jennings. They picked him up on a Friday, and on Monday, the prosecutor in St. Louis City, they had decided not to prosecute on the altercation between he and his girlfriend. But they were still holding him for Jennings. Now, he was suicidal while he was in St. Louis City. And when they called Jennings and asked if they wanted him, Jennings said yes, they wanted him. Because they wanted him to come back out to Jennings and post another bond for this warrant for these 3 sticks of deodorant that never left the store. That they've already collected a $500 bond, but they've now revoked that bond and set a new bond. So he goes to Jennings. Jennings comes and picks him up from the city, and he goes to Jennings. And he's not in Jennings. He's in Jennings less than 8 hours when he hangs himself and commits suicide. All over these petty warrants and 3 sticks of deodorant. Just because Jennings wants to continue to make money off of these charges. And that's the real crisis that we have here.
Yeah. And see, we're seeing that in other states in the other courts, the misdemeanor courts, the district courts. I mean, Texas is the prison capital of the country. So we know holding people on petty offenses, you know, is the norm here. It can happen. We know Khalif Browder, I think, in New York, who was held for so long on something about a backpack, and that young brother suffered, you know, harm that he was never able to get over because of that oppression while being held on these petty offenses. Sure. So, it's a big issue. Thank you for sharing that, Brother Gerald. Did someone want to you know, go ahead and I pass the mic if there was another comment along that line.
Very briefly, brother, I think Brother Christmas mentioned the lines. Was that you that mentioned that, Brother Christmas, or was that Sister Pam with the long lines?
I think I talked
around
about those long lines.
That was Sister Pam talking about the long lines. But I will add, the people would wait in those long lines, and they would still have to be exposed to the elements. So they would stand in those lines in the wintertime and in the rain.
And see, and the reason I ask about that is because situations like that, that is court management. And see, even with that, we have to put pressure on a system that attempts to put pressure on us. You know, when you have a situation like that, you know that you're probably only meeting one time a month. You know you got to have more court dates than that. There's a program, I instituted a program in my programs, as we began to set our court docket, that there's no more than 100 to 150 defendants on any docket. So that means that you will have a jam maybe, but you won't have 300 or 400 people standing out in the hall and standing out in the elements and standing out waiting to be seen. See, that's something that has to be addressed from the standpoint of
our relationships in the cities with our people. If we ask, if our people are saying, hey, I will go out sometime and take little impromptu surveys about, you know, what you think we need to do? What do you think we need? How can we serve the, because see, ultimately, what we have to understand inside that court system, we are still public servants. We still have to serve the very people that we're dealing with. You know, so how can we serve them better? It's uncomfortable either way. I tell people, when people come in my office, it's never pleasant. Because either they're coming to put somebody in jail or coming to get somebody out of jail. So it's nobody ever comes to my office to ask me how I'm doing or what's going on or are the Suns going to win or anything to that effect. It's always a negative situation. You know, so what I take that and I don't take it personally, but we have to deal with the program and we have to deal with the product that we have and let it go twofold. We have this system has a responsibility to the citizen that pays for it to give it equal justice. And it hadn't been that way because we hadn't been controlling it. It hadn't been that way because we've never been in a position. And they made situations that were definite so that we wouldn't get there, but we're here now. So if we know better, then we have to do better.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, as His Honor was just saying, you know, it's court management. Now, you know, here in the City of Houston Municipal Courts, I think there are about maybe 10 or 15 in that building. But I want to also now take it, let's say, to the Harris County, Texas courts. As you know, Sister Pamela, for a long, long time, the court dockets for the misdemeanors and for the county courts and the district courts, meaning the felony courts, all had the same docket call time, 9 a.m. Now, if you have, even let's say, with the, you know, so now if you have, let's say, 3, 4, 500 people having to come, even though it's, you know, it's a huge building, you know, 20-some floors and everything, for trying to get into these courtrooms at the same time for 9 o'clock. And if you miss that court docket,
it's a wrap.
Your bond can potentially be revoked. Right.
Yes.
So now what the City of Houston Municipal Courts do, and I would imagine it's similar to what His Honor was just saying, that you're dealing with the court management, so now they have staggered court times. And now they finally, I guess about 2 or 3 years ago, the Harris County courts now have now staggered their times. But for a long time, it was the same thing. So now you are inviting people to, you can't fit 15, 20 people in the elevator. That's impossible. But you never took to change that. And that's what His Honor was, court management. But if, in my opinion, if you're predisposed not to even care about that, my court time is 9 o'clock, and if you're not here, so be it. You know, then that's wrong, because as His Honor was saying, we're still servants of the people.
Right.
Well,
and,
you
and,
know,
and with that,
yes, sir. Go ahead.
I was just gonna add a little piece with that. There's an obligation, even with your city council people, your county commissioners, each one of them have a liaison to you, to our court. So I go to them and almost force a meeting, say, this is what we need. This is what we're going through. This is what's happening, so that you can get an idea, because ultimately a municipal court is a cash cow. Ultimately,
yeah, and I think that's the problem, too, that we have here, is that we have all of these municipalities, and it is a cash cow for everybody. It's a cash cow for the municipalities, and it's also a cash cow for the lawyers, because many of these courts have night court. So many attorneys in private practice or the judges and prosecutors. I used to be a municipal prosecutor. Many of them, that's a part-time job for them. For many, they represent the municipalities as their legal counsel. And so everybody is making money off of it. And so you don't have a large amount of lawyers out here, even black lawyers, that are challenging the system because they're making money off of it. Even the attorneys that practice in municipal law and traffic law, you know, you can make a good living as an attorney in St. Louis only doing traffic. And that's it because of the way our system is set up. So that also makes it problematic because you don't have as many people, even in our community, speaking out about it that should, that know better because they are profiting from it. And so
when it cases.
And so the part that we can't miss, and Brother Maurice, I'll let you speak after this real quick. What we can't miss is that we're talking about the victims here. We're talking about the people who are the source of all of this. What I say is black codes. This, you know, these are our clients. They're being, their bones are being picked, and this is where the harm is coming up. The depression is coming up. The desire to not be productive is coming up. And we're describing greed. This is what we're describing, greed-based systems where sometimes the attorneys are greedy too. And so, you know, again, I just wanted to throw that out there because these are our clients who are suffering. Their families are suffering. They're losing their homes. They're losing their cars. They're losing their jobs. Their licenses are being suspended. And a lot of times they're losing their minds. So wanted to throw that out there. And I also wanted to just throw out there, the lawyers can serve sometimes. Our role is that of hand-holding. That's what I call it, or, you know, advocating for your client above and beyond what the minimum standards may be, because our people do need help in navigating this system, because that's what we're trying to put out here. So I wanted to talk about that, and I also wanted to tell our listeners, please press the number one to get into the host queue if you have a question or a comment. We're having such a great discussion here amongst these lawyers, and I wanted to just put it back out there about, and perhaps we can even bring probation in. I wanted to ask about how to be successful on probation, because we know that a lot of cases are resolved with people being on probation, and actually sometimes it is better than going to jail, is what we think, but then sometimes the people end up going to jail anyway. You know, we got electronic monitoring fees. We just have a whole system of this, and, you know, it's a lot. You know, we want to bring that into the conversation as well regarding this whole gateway to the criminal justice system that we see sometimes.
Well, this is one of the things that I see oftentimes is from the defendant perspective, or as we'll call them in our case, our victims, they're not knowledgeable of what's going on. They're sometimes oblivious to what's happening around them, and they simply want to go home. You know, whatever we need to do to get me going home is what I'll do. So you may plead to anything, any condition or any situation, depending on whose best interest, you know, that person's best interest is. So I think one of the things that we have to do is really inform our clients and our young brothers and sisters who are offending or victims in this case. They have to have full knowledge of what's going on around them. They have to answer questions and not just be ready to go home. You know, because
a lot
of times,
I think that's a big issue.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times what I see, I was telling Sister Pam, young brother was about to get played on a ticket, and the guy called his name, called the name that was on the warrant, and it wasn't the name that was the person. So you're about to take a plea on somebody else's charges. And it's like, huh? Now, how many times does that happen and it slips through the cracks? You know, but at the same time, when that when that person is coming to their to court, I ask them, "Do you have any documents? Do you have your?" "No, I ain't got that. So where is it? I just know to be here. So it's kind of like we're walking into a point of slaughter, and we accept the slaughter. And it will slaughter you if you allow it. But at the same time, if you, as the Bible says, if you resist the devil, it will flee from you. So if you begin to go in and really deal with this situation, it will be common and quick, and you'll be out of the system before you even really realize what hit you. You know the process. And one of the things that I'm an advocate of is full knowledge of what you're doing. What attorneys inform the people of what's happening. Magistrate, the clerks that work under me, inform these people of what's going on. But in order for them to know, you got to know. So you have to continue to inform and educate your people that are working in this particular. You know, a lot of times it's easy to get caught up as municipal court as your own little fiefdom because nobody's paying you any attention. And you got all the power, all the rules. You're deciphering all the laws, and then here you are. But somebody has to check you. You have to be checked. And that's why I'm a big advocate of community advisory boards. I'm a big advocate of saying, okay, let's go in and check the system. You know, the mayor of our city came to me and said he's tired of seeing black people going to jail. Okay, so now let's create alternative situations. Let's create things that they don't have to go to jail. Or if you look into the situation, let's look and see. You know, if you see police officers bringing a report in on a particular address or in a particular area, my mind, I'm going to go to that area and see what's going on. So why do we have all these trespasses in this area? What's going on?
Right.
I'm going to meet with the sergeant, talk to him, so that we can bring some clarity to here. Because what I found out, and a lot of times when you're dealing with your community, it's underserviced. Your community is underserviced. So it's not that they're bad people. They just don't have jobs. It's not that they can't work. They just don't have skills. So we have to be, authoritative enough. We have to be in our positions of authority. We have to command that to work for the people, not just to command it to get a free meal and a closer parking space.
Yeah, that's
and
beautiful.
I think as
and
attorneys,
I'm,
we have to go out yes, also. And one of the things that we want to do coming up in the fall is have community conversations with our people on these issues, you know, and not wait until they actually get into court. So, you know, in our places of worship, with our fraternities and sororities, with other community organizations that we belong to, on radio shows like this, I think we need to have more community conversations educating our people before they get into these situations, because I think you are absolutely correct. So often they just want to get out quick. So they will just agree to anything without even understanding what they are agreeing to. If they call my voicemail right now, the first thing on my voicemail is, don't say anything, don't sign anything.
That's right. That's
you know,
right.
Because
yes, sir.
Doing criminal defense, you know, the number one thing that I want you to know is be quiet. Just be quiet and get you an attorney. You know, you have the right to remain silent, and you have to exercise that, though. And you have to know. And, you know, and people all across the city, they know that. They know me, and they know me by that. You know, don't say anything, don't sign anything. I just drill it in their head. It's on the back of my card. And that's what we have to do because, you know, God has given us this knowledge, and we have to share it with our people because many of our people just suffer from not knowing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Let's take this call, and when we come back, I want y'all to talk on that issue because we as black attorneys who care, we know that we work really hard to walk our people out of these systems sometimes. So let's take a call. We have a Sister Brenda Muhammad, and she has a comment. Asalaamu Alaikum, Sister Brenda.
Walaikum Salaam. Yes. I hope you can hear me. I'm not sure if I did this right or not.
No, we hear
you. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for calling. Yes, ma'am.
Praise the Lord to Allah. Yes, ma'am. In my prayers, I always say, You know, I thank Allah for coming in the person of Master Farid Muhammad, or else we would have no hope. And I see that in you and this panel and the program that you put on. I almost in
all
tears
to
from
Allah.
Hearing
all
some of the accounts that you're bringing and helping us to understand just what our condition is, and especially the poor. I'm poor, but help, I'm poorer than me. So, you know, the kind of debt or pressure that you feel, the type of degradation or what's another word for humiliation that you go through, that our people go through from day to day, you know, it's just heartbreaking. So I just wanted to make that comment that I'm so happy that you all are there. I listen almost every night. This is the first time I've been moved to say something. Because I've been moved, and Brother Gerald, whoever that was, talking about some of the community service, you know, going out into community and the churches in order to explain these things to our people, I think it's just a great idea, because we need help. We need that's why Muhammad needs the nation to give us hope. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much, Sister Brenda. Wa alaikum salam, ma'am. Yeah, and I just wanted to say something with what she's saying. You know, it's so important that we look at it from the eyes of our people, because I had a friend once who was a young man in St. Louis, and when I got to St. Louis, his whole demeanor was so broken down. He thought he was like a horrible person because the police always stopped him. He didn't have money to pay these fines, so his whole self-esteem was low. Like I say, they were afraid to go out, you know, just, and then we turn on each other with this. So again, I just want us to talk as well, anybody comment on that, but also talk about how we as black attorneys, we have to work to make sure our people know how to be successful on probation, even if I got to call you, even if I have to remind you, even if I have to, you know, hold your hand. So yes, but so we haven't heard from you.
As Brother Gerald was saying, and thank you, that, you know, and as His Honor was saying also, it is incumbent upon us when we represent somebody who, let's say, is accused of a crime, to let him or her know what it is that you're getting into. I know down here, you know, when if somebody desires to, you know, take a plea to something, and as you know, Sister Pamela, and I would imagine it's also up there in St. Louis, Brother Gerald, that, you know, you get the plea papers, and, you know, the thought is to, you know, to go over the plea papers with the person you're representing. Well, I spend, you know, if somebody decides to do that, I let him or her know we're going to sit down and we're going to go over each and every paragraph. And what I also do with respect to that is I make sure that I translate it into layman's terms, because all of these, you know, these Latin phrases and all of these different things, let's just cut through the chase. This is what this really means. This is what this means, that, okay, if you are on a certain type of probation that they have here in the state of Texas, a deferred adjudication, I let people know, okay, what that type of probation actually means. And so if we know, as a good friend, our Southern Regional Minister would always say to us, when that if you know, you have the advantage. And so it is incumbent upon us as black attorneys particularly to let those persons whom we're representing, to let them know. And, you know, as members of fraternities and sororities, that it is also incumbent upon us and our civic organizations and social organizations to have, we cannot have, there's no such thing as too many, you know, organizations or platforms to let our people know. I'm proud to say, you know, that we do that. And And what is it? What is that phrase? I don't know if it's biblical, but to whom much is given, much is required.
Much is required. That's right.
It is incumbent upon us to do that, to have these forums, and you know, to have and all sorts of them to let us know. And as you're saying, how can we be successful on probation? Well, the simple answer is to follow the instructions or the directives on, you know, of the conditions of your probation. But how do you do that? It starts with understanding what the conditions are. And you know, and it's not on the judge to necessarily explain them. It's really on the counsel to explain what these conditions are. When somebody is, you know, comes to me and they are facing a parole violation or even, you know, or probation violation, the first thing I do, let's go over what your conditions were. You know, if they received the conditions and I was not representing them, then I go through, okay, this is what this means, you know, that you had to do this, you had to pay your fees and this. But as we were saying earlier in the conversation, that if I'm behind on my fees, you know, and if you're represented by counsel, call your counsel and let him or her know, look, I'm behind on my fees. Can we let probation know? Can we let parole know? Or, you know, the probation department, the parole department, the court know, so that we can begin to get ahead of it instead of, you know, having them to file something on us. So in order to be successful on these probations and paroles, we have to know what these are. Just don't sign. You can always tell if somebody just signed something just because, as Brother Gerald was saying, I just want to get done with it. I want to get out of here, get on with my life. But you don't know what it is that you're signing oftentimes until you get a full explanation of what it is.
And the key, I think, with what you're saying, I think is so beautiful, Brother Thiel, is that sometimes the probation will get you in more trouble than what the charge that you're originally. You get in more trouble with you getting on probation, and then it's hanging over your head, and you violate somehow, maybe because you don't have the money or whatever. So that's why it's so important that there's a knowing and voluntary. And sometimes you have to talk to them like you're their parent, like, do you really think you can do this? You know, and this is what that means. And don't go for the tricks and don't go for the traps, because this is what I see, because I want you to be successful. So,
and you know, as on that same line, Sister Pamela, as you know, if you are accused of violating your probation, and let's say even if it was a deferred adjudication type probation, most people think that, okay, well, now, now I can go to trial. No. All they have to do is prove whether or not you violated any one of those conditions. And then the judge can sentence you to the maximum penalty that was applicable to that crime, because you have, you've already pled to the crime. You just got deferred probation or adjudication or straight probation to keep you out of, let's say, the county facility or the prison. So that's also letting people know, look, and the standard or the burden of proof is not as high as reasonable doubt.
So
you have to explain all of that.
So it's like why probation is not always a gift, you know? I mean, everything has strings attached. That's what people need to know, and they need to get competent lawyers that will help them be successful. So as we're rounding down on this, and I think we need to talk about, you know, how can we bring better solutions to the table. We talked about that. We talked about the false impressions about the outcomes. Oh, and that's a big thing for me. when we sometimes see people going into court with criminal activity, because again, we our ultimate solution is let's try to be better righteous people. You know, let's avoid mm-hmm. these traps, and that's important. Let's not let's not smoke the marijuana if we can help it. Let's not go to the places where, you know, drinking is going on. Don't drink and drive. All of those things. But the mm-hmm. key is that sometimes these courts, they can trap you by making you think, oh, this is not a big deal. Oh, you just got a slap on the wrist. And then you end up being in a world of trouble because of a false perception. And mm-hmm. I think have we as lawyers, you know, we want to get our clients off. That's what we want to get. But we also want to make our communities decent and safe places to live. I think most of you all on the line or all of you all on the line. So have we seen that in advising our clients to, you know, look at this seriousness of where you're at and have a perception on where you want to go? Has anyone ever had that type of experience in representing their client to stop what we call recidivism? I mean, recidivism is such a big issue in the black community and in the criminal mm-hmm. justice system. It means that you pick up a case and you leave the court, and then, you know, they almost expect to see you back because it's almost like they have right. like a string pulling you back. So how do we avoid that as well with our clients? Any input on that as well?
I think we have to do the things that you're saying, Sister Pam, but quite often, for me, not only are we attorneys representing these individuals, but we really are counselors and therapists also, because we're trying to teach them a different lifestyle, like you said, and, you know, we're working with not only our clients, but with their families too. And so often there are not black men in these families. So I will find quite often that many of my clients, their mothers will call me for everything dealing with them. You know, I can't get them to do, you know, I can't get them to find a job, or I can't get them to do this. And they call you, and this is totally outside of your representation of the individual.
Mm-hmm.
But they are just looking for some assistance. And then oftentimes you will have clients who have not had a strong male figure in their life. So they just gravitate to you because of the stuff that you're telling them. And so they will, you know, follow up and call you and ask you about different issues totally unrelated to their representation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to see that, audience, please, listeners. You find that with some black attorneys, and I'm not going to say all black attorneys, you know, vet your attorneys carefully. Go with, you know, referrals. Mm. People know who's doing good jobs in the communities. But you're not going to usually get that type of service with white attorneys. So please,
and you
hire
know,
black lawyers.
And on that, Sister Pamela, you know, I had a,
yes,
you know, part of my experience, you know, every time that I'm, you know, representing one of our young brothers or sisters, you know, I always relate to them, you know, a personal story that I had, you know, and a personal experience that I had, you know, and one young man in particular, you know, that his mother had come to an NAACP legal redress clinic. This had to be back in the early 2000s. And I just happened to be, you know, one of the attorneys who she spoke with, you know, and her son was accused of assault on a police officer. And as she told me, she had met with a number of attorneys, some even black, who were telling her, because the young man was juvenile at the time, who were telling her, oh, we can get him probation. And the first, she was telling me that was the very first thing when she met with about three or four who told her right away, without even looking at the case or knowing anything about it. So this particular Saturday, she had come to the NAACP legal redress, and she was fortunate to, you know, have sat with me. So a couple of days after, she came to the office, and, you know, I told her, I said, ma'am, probation may be something viable, but I can't tell you that. I haven't read anything. I don't know anything. Have you and your son come to meet with me? Well, as it turned out, we had, had done all of the research and had gone to court. The whole thing took about a year before we got this thing resolved and ultimately dismissed. And I'm proud to say that this young man graduated from Wiley College in Marshall, Texas, and is now with a degree, I guess, in accounting or business administration or something, and is doing quite well. And he and his mother and I, we talk literally at least once a month, making sure that this young man's progress. And so it goes to the thing again, you know, that we as black attorneys, conscious black attorneys, maybe I should put it that way, you know,
that's
because,
a good
again,
terminology.
We could close our eyes and it could be us tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And how would we want to be treated if we have to go to a municipal court or if we get charged with something else? How would we want to be treated? You know, and that's oftentimes what I look at it, try to put myself in those situations. And that's why when I'm representing or a young person comes to the office, I tell them of my personal situation so that they know, yes, your life is not over. Yeah, you did.
Sure,
you made a mistake. You smoked weed or whatever the situation was. But that's not the end of it. You have your whole life to live. But sometimes we are so, what's that phrase? We just look at it as a death knell. And it's not.
And we buy into the negative stereotypes with our young people. And, like, look at that brother. He succeeded. And so we're down. We're coming down to the end of this wonderful and thoughtful conversation. I thank you all. I think in listening to Brother Maurice, the judge, he's telling us something. One of our mantras with the show is separation. You know, we believe, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has taught us, that separation is the solution, because these problems, these tickets, these surveillance, putting people in jail, treating it like debtor's prison sometimes because our people don't have the money to pay, so they're being surveilled. You know, but if we're overpopulating into some areas, sometimes I hear Sister Ava say that, where you do have larger populations and you can control the narrative and you can govern yourselves. That's what the beautiful things that he told us, it really made me think, because we got, sometimes our people are on TV like, oh, we got to ask this person to help us, you know, looking outside of our own community. And, you know, for many of us, that's not a solution. That's not a solution for me. And I think what we're saying sometimes as lawyers, we try not to make that a solution for our clients. Let's solve our own problems. So in closing, I would like to go around and see if there are any closing remarks that each of you all who have just been so full of information would like to give. What do you want our listeners to walk away with this evening, brothers? I want to start with Brother Magistrate Judge, Your Honor. You want to start giving us some closing?
Yes, I guess I can. No problem with that.
Yes, sir.
One of the things that I would like to leave, the thought that I would leave, is we talk about knowing what we're charged with, knowing what we're doing. One of the things that I do is just a general rule is I avail myself for case review. So if you want to, a citizen wants to come in and their officials are bound to review their cases before they go to court. So if they want to review their courses cases and see what they need, and just know what you are being charged with. As an official, one of the things I think that we have to really understand is that we are here to serve the people, not to punish them. So if we see that there is a need in our community, we have to go and fill that need. If we see that we are under service, then we have to begin to at least put a team together to provide the service. Community partnerships. Brother Christmas talked about our churches, our fraternities, our sororities. Everybody has to have a contact with the municipal court because it is just that connected in the community.
If you want voter registration, I open it up for voter registration. Just come and vote, you know, whatever you're trying to do. People have temp services. You can put your thing out there and come out and get a job so you can go pay your fine. So broaden yourselves so that we can begin to heal our people.
Beautiful, beautiful. And so we're down to 5 minutes, and so I want Brother Christmas, if you could tell us how we can contact you if they're in the St. Louis area. How do they get in contact with you, and any closing remarks that you have, sir?
If they're in the St. Louis area, they can reach me at area code 314-588-7105. That's 314-588-7105. And if you get my voicemail, just leave me a message. It's going to say, as soon as it comes on, don't say anything, don't sign anything. Because I do believe in exercising your rights. And I agree, we have to have community partnerships, and we have to take on this responsibility of challenging all of this negativity that's being marketed to our children and our people. And we have to challenge that and enlighten our people, because we are being bombarded with foolishness. And we have got to push back stronger and harder. And we've got to realize, all of us, because we have a significant problem with violence in the city of St. Louis right now. And it's everybody's problem. You can't just put your head in the sand and say, well, it's only happening over there and it won't affect me over here. Because it will. And we have to challenge it. And we have to work together, you know, and make our brothers and sisters our problems and work together to come up with solutions.
Yes, sir. Beautiful. Make our communities decent and safe places to live. Brother Phil, we're down to like a minute. Do you want to make a closing and tell people how they can get in contact with you?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. If anybody is listening is within the state of Texas, you can reach me on my direct line, 713-807-8167. And I would just also say that no matter where you are, if you are facing any sort of criminal accusation, you know, and if you have either a court-appointed counsel, a lawyer, a public defender, or even a privately retained lawyer, they are still bound by the same canons of ethics and representation. So don't just think that, okay, well, I have a court-appointed lawyer, you know, he is not doing this or she's not doing that. No, they're bound to. Just as His Honor said, when somebody is accused of something, the lawyer is supposed to make sure that the papers, that the charging instrument was right. And so His Honor is holding the lawyers who come into his courtroom accountable. So we also, as you know, have to know if we're accused of something, if we're accused of a crime, no matter what type of lawyer that we have, as I said, public defender, court appointed, or private attorney, the canons of ethics still apply to everyone. And you have to make sure that you hold that counsel's feet to the fire and that they fully explain the situation.
Right. That means call them and show up and make sure you understand. So, I thank you all so much for coming on our show, A Time for Justice. I would like to thank you all for listening to A Time for Justice. You can listen to archives of our show, A Time for Justice. Please tune in to the Elevated Places Network, Ask Dr. Ava, on Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. We would like to thank the Elevated Places team, Sister Dr. Ava Muhammad, Sister Donna Muhammad, Brother Terrence Muhammad, Sister Rona Muhammad, my executive producer, Sister Samaya Muhammad. We look forward to you all tuning in for our show next week. We have an awesome guest lined up. We're going to speak to someone who's very close and can give us some insight onto what happened with the Dr. William Bill Cosby case. We believe we'll have Brother Andrew Wyatt on the show, who is a spokesperson. So we ask that you all
Spread the News, tune in, and thank you for listening to the Elevated Places Network presents A Time for Justice, because we really want to help our people by removing those distractions and giving clear understanding of knowledge of the law, because knowledge is power. So thank you all once again for listening, and please tune in to Dr. Ava Muhammad's show on Thursdays at 7 o'clock Central Standard Time, and we'll talk to you next week. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.